Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Very happy to be back here with you on a Wednesday afternoon. Joe Heschmeyer will be with us both hours. And it's Ask Me Anything, so you can ask Joe whatever you like. 888-318-7884. I want to make sure I make clear anyone can call. If you've got a question about the Catholic faith, even if you are the farthest thing from a Catholic, and I don't actually know what the farthest thing from a Catholic is, but if you think, I'm the farthest thing from a Catholic, but I've got a question, I'm interested in this, I want to challenge them on some, whatever, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. And if you're Catholic, you can call. That's the full range, I think. I think I've covered the full range there. 888-318-7884. The number I want to thank Edgar and Thomas, who covered for me in recent days. It was a difficult few days for me, and I think Thomas mentioned it on Monday. My mother passed on Sunday, but if you can say that someone was serving others right up until death, that's what she did. She was really quite heroic, and my father was magnificent. My sister, who took care of my mother, made it possible for her to die at home. But my mother received communion 9:30 in the morning, and she died at 12:30, so 3 hours after receiving communion on Divine Mercy Sunday. And you can't feel more, as a son, you can't feel more blessed than that. I mean, that's thank you, Jesus, for all of that. And and a thank you for everybody who has prayed for my mother, Joanne. She's quite an extraordinary person, a very funny person, very serious Catholic. So that meant I never got to miss any church services my entire childhood, including the obscure ones on Good Friday. We were at all of them. And I'm grateful for it now, but at the time, I did not feel grateful for it. So, again, thank you for your prayers for my mom. Thanks for everybody who covered for me. Joe Heschmeyer, welcome. Thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for having me. That was actually surprisingly encouraging to hear you say that, because we just dragged our kids to Triduum, and they were, we'll say a mixed bag. They're 5-3-1, so we had low expectations, and they sometimes met those.
Right. Yeah. I just remember Stations of the Cross was the hardest thing as a child. I just kept thinking, is there any way they could do this quicker? And that is, I realize that's a completely irreligious approach to it, but I just thought that he's dragging this out on purpose. I could tell Father is dragging this out on purpose.
We went to a fish fry during Lent, and unbeknownst to us, they booked the Stations of the Cross upstairs at the same time the fish fry was downstairs. So we were faced with this dilemma, and we'd already promised the kids food. So my 3-year-old son was like, he was very interested in Stations. And so he took like 2 steps towards the church and was just like, I'm going to have fish. You could see the battle being waged in his tiny soul.
Yeah.
But I also knew he wakes up hungry.
Yeah.
There's no way he's going to be able to resist for all of Stations.
Yeah, I'm with him. I am with him on that. At least I was as a child. Again, the number 888-318-7884. Whatever your question about the Catholic faith, you are welcome to call. Joe is apologist here, but author of, I don't know why I said but, it's not exceptional to also be the author of many books. All of our apologists are, but the author of wonderful books like Pope Peter and The Eucharist is Really Jesus and The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. And he's the proprietor of Shameless Popery, one of the best podcasts on the internet, according to 11, maybe 12 people. Shameless Popery. I'm one of them. Shameless Popery. Check it out. Did I get to everything, Joe? Should I go to the phones or?
Yeah, I think that was everything. I'm happy to start taking calls.
You're happy for me to stop talking, is what you're saying. I feel like that's.
There was a subtext. I want to respect your grieving process by not picking on you, and that cuts out 80% of our conversation.
Actually, I think it was helpful if you pick on me. It makes me feel like another brother. I've got three, and now I've got four. David in Canada. Canada watching on YouTube. You are numero uno today. Welcome, David. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hello, Si. Hello, Joe.
Hi, David.
So, hello. My question is, so there's this growing narrative online where some people are saying you're not a real Catholic unless you're born into it. And they're criticizing converts. And some of the quotes I've seen are things like, I'm not religious, but I'm 100% Catholic and more Catholic than a convert. Or my dad was Catholic. We've never been in a church, but I'm still more Catholic than a convert. And this one here that says, converts treat the church like a little exclusive cult, judging normal Catholics who only go to Mass twice a year and never go to confession. My ancestors have been Catholic for hundreds of years. I don't need someone who converted 2 years ago telling me I'm a sinner because they read that in some catechism. So, Joe, I'm wondering, what is your perspective on this? Have you seen this emerging anywhere?
I have heard only secondhand, and people telling me. I think I'm not. I've seen stupid things online, but I've been spared whatever corner of the internet you've discovered this insanity. I mean, look, it highlights something that I hope many of our non-Catholic listeners can appreciate. And in fact, many Catholic listeners who hear these sometimes scary stats of like only such and such percent of Catholics believe in the real presence. When you include in that number both the people who are Catholic because they actually believe it, and then also the people who it's like their dad was Catholic and so they still claim to be Catholic, but they've never been to church. I mean, it's like saying you're Irish on St. Patrick's Day. There's a reason we don't count those people when you're actually doing the Irish population, because it's such an attenuated connection. So look, I would say this. The church is more than a set of intellectual propositions. And so I think the people who say like, hey, we have a connection to Catholicism because we were baptized into this and we, you know, grew up in this society, in this family, I accept that kind of premise. But it's not just a social institution. It's not just if you're of this ethnic group or this, you know, family or whatever else, therefore you're a Catholic. That's such a lukewarm and meaningless kind of conception of Catholicism at heart, that it's why even continue to use the claim. Like the centuries of Catholic ancestors you cite to, who bled and died potentially to be Catholic, would not look at your lukewarm apostasy and say, ah, yeah, this is what I risked my life for. This is why I spread the gospel. This is why I held to the faith when it was hard. No, of course not. Like, the church is a family, but it's a family of faith. And so those who were born into that family, like, I don't know, the apostles, the first generation of Christians, you know, those people are every bit as much of the family as the old Pharisees saying, oh, you can't come in if you're a Gentile. Oh, you can't come in if you're a convert. Like, this is that stodgy old-timers club, ironically, is doing the very thing that they're accusing converts of doing. They're trying to gatekeep this thing. If there's a gate, it's Christ himself who calls himself the gate. And so those who accept Christ rightly can claim to be Catholic, especially if they're in union with his church, as they're meant to be. Whereas those who may have been sacramentally incorporated but have rejected the gate, they've shown themselves out in a real way. So we can still say they're Catholic in one sense, but in the deeper sense, and the sense that's most meaningful to God and should be the most meaningful to us, many of these people won't be counted as true Catholics on the last day.
Thank you for that. I know that question seems kind of crazy, but when there's like, you know, hundreds of these comments with tens of thousands of likes on them, it's kind of like, what's going on here, right? But also big fan of Shameless Popery. So
oh, thank you very much. Get that. I think without psychoanalyzing tens of thousands of people, I think one of the things going on is that lukewarm Catholics are confronted by people who are actually believing the faith that the lukewarm people's grandparents believed. And seeing people today still believe those things to be true is like seeing, you know, like, I don't know, like just see, you've got a family recipe and you've like diluted it. And then someone comes along and makes it the way grandma used to make it. And you taste it and you're like, oh yeah, I've been watering mine down for ages. They've been watering down their faith for ages. And seeing someone living out the real thing, I think is probably convicting and confronting. And one way of responding to that is to try to bully them on the internet for being faithful followers of Jesus Christ.
Right. Well, thank you for the answer, and have a good live stream.
Thank you, David. Are you a convert, or were you raised Catholic?
No, I'm a convert.
Oh, I am so sick of you people. Okay.
If I could mute the host.
thanks, David. Thanks
don't
for
worry,
the call.
He meant Canadians when he said that. Not convicts.
You said the call was for Catholics or people that were the furthest thing from Catholics. So would that be a convert? I don't know.
That is certainly not. Certainly
I was going to say a penguin, but that's because I'm so deeply ensconced in dad jokes. I was just thinking geographically.
The farthest thing from a Catholic is a penguin?
Like a free penguin in South Pole.
Are your kids amused by this kind of stuff? Or
no.
No?
Okay. No one is. All right. But I've got to keep working on it.
David, thanks. We'll be right back with more Ask Me Anything with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
The most original and exclusive Catholic content is on EWTN Radio.
I pray that EWTN News In Depth will help the everyday life of everyday Catholics by bringing them the news that matters to them and helping them to have the information at their fingertips for whatever it is that they need to be able to engage with the world confidently with their faith.
EWTN News In Depth with Montse Alvarado, Friday night, 8 Eastern, on EWTN Television and Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer, our guests, Ask Me Anything this hour, 888-318-7884. Everybody is welcome, and I say that, but I don't know if I mean it, because every single line is full. So you could dial, but all the lines are full. But in our hearts, you're welcome, and we'll try to get to you, but you might have to keep trying a little bit. Trevor is in Buffalo, Wyoming, watching on YouTube. I understand why Buffalo, Wyoming would be named Buffalo. I don't know why Buffalo, New York is named Buffalo. But hi, Trevor.
Hi, how are you doing?
Really good. Welcome.
Hey. So I recently got married, and I also recently found out that my wife is pregnant.
Congratulations, times
like
two.
Thank you. Oh, do you say yours is two?
No, I said congratulations times two. For the wedding and for the pregnancy. Okay. Yes.
yeah. But I'm feeling like a little uneasy about being like a father and stuff, and was wondering if you had any advice, how to approach like the calling of being a father and how to be more excited about this. Because like I've always wanted to be a father, but now that it's here, I'm just kind of anxious about it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to give you kind of scattershot advice because that's what I've got. So
First,
I actually talk about this. I offer you this book, but it was through OSV, not Catholic Answers. So I don't think we have it in stock, but I have a book called A Man Named Joseph, where I look at the fatherhood of St. Joseph as kind of a model for fathers. Because one of the things that Pope Francis talks about is that he calls him a shadow of the father, which I think is a really beautiful way of expressing this biblical concept. So in Ephesians chapter 3, St. Paul says, For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, Pater, from whom every family, Patria, in heaven and on earth is named. So every family, every fatherhood in Greek, is a little image of the fatherhood of God. So if you want to be a father well, your task is just be godlike, to be godly in how you treat your wife and your children, and to show them the tender mercy and love of the Father. And in a way, this is incredibly liberating, because there's all sorts of questions of what, you know, because look, I'll tell you, as a parent, it is both harder and more joyful than you're anticipating. Maybe not you, because it sounds like you're already pretty anxious. It was certainly harder than I expected and better than I expected. And so people who say, like, I wouldn't trade it for the world, and you look at them and you're like, but you look so frazzled. Those two things coexist in a weird way. I think the same thing is true of marathon runners, but I don't understand it. But what I'd say is you can have these moments where you think, okay, I'm in a situation where I have to react to something that my child has done. And there's a couple different reactions I could take. And maybe this reaction will help them. Or maybe this will be something they're going to talk about a therapist to 20 years from now. Or maybe it's totally irrelevant and it just doesn't work. And I won't know, maybe for years, maybe ever, which actions were the right ones and the wrong ones in the situation. And so that can be really overwhelming. So to know that throughout it all, you should live in such a way that you model mercy and forgiveness and everything else, I think is kind of a foundational principle. Does that part make sense? I've actually got more to add to it, but I want to make sure that I'm making some sense.
Oh, yeah, that part makes sense.
Okay, great. So the Catechism talks about parents as the first teachers of their kids. And I've heard this many times, often in the context of like homeschooling or, you know, this sort of thing. But in reality, the primary sense of it is that you are the first one to teach your kids about Jesus and to teach your kids about what it is to live a Christian life. And so the Catechism gives some very practical steps to kind of do that well. So if you've got the Catechism, it's paragraph 2221 all the way through 2231. And it says in 2223 that you bear witness to your responsibility as the first teacher of your kids by creating a home where tenderness, forgiveness, respect, fidelity, and disinterested service are the rule. Disinterested doesn't mean apathetic. Disinterested means like you're doing it for their good rather than your good. So you are serving your wife and your kids as the norm, not as the exception. You are faithful. You are forgiving. You are respectful and you are tender. Notice those things are very different than a lot of the secular criteria for what effective parenting looks like. You'll find 50 different parenting philosophies and 49 or 50 of them don't work. And I don't know which one does, if one does. But if you follow the church's guide, if in the face of all your mistakes, you are living out a fatherhood of tenderness, forgiveness, respect, fidelity, and disinterested service, your kids will be okay. There's more to it. There's also a lot of discussion about self-mastery, that you can't be like a slave to sin and be a good father. And then additionally, the need to show and receive forgiveness. So forgive your kids, tell them you forgive them. But also when you fall short, which you will, despite your best efforts, go to them and ask them for forgiveness and let them learn mercy on both ends. Does that help? Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah, that helps a lot.
Good. And then the last thing, I know I've gone long on this, but it's such a big question, and I think probably a lot of people have dealt with this. I occasionally just fall back on, like, okay, we've been doing this parenting thing since caveman times and, you know, all the way back to Adam and Eve. And it's not always great. I mean, Adam and Eve had some family dysfunction, I think, if it's fair to say, with Cain and Abel. But kids have turned out more or less okay for thousands of years, with or without parenting books, with or without all the best strategies. And so don't exaggerate how important you are to the process, and then just do your bit to the best of your ability and apologize when you fall short.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll tell you what, maybe you'd like to have it in the home. We'll send you the big book of Catholic answers if you'd like it. Just hang on and tell Edgar. He'll pick up the phone in a sec here, and just give him your address and we will send it off to you. I'm going to go back to the phones, Joe, but I looked up, I wanted to see, are people really picking on Catholic converts on the internet? And there are some people, and there's kind of a thread going. And somebody said it started after the death of Pope Francis, or it became a thing like on TikTok and stuff after the death of Pope Francis. This one young woman is saying she's kind of proud of converting to Catholicism. She wrestled with it and came in. And then someone wrote, like, you converted for aesthetics. That's what somebody wrote to her. And I just wanted to take a second to because that call is not a call I expected from the gentleman right. from Canada. Like, I didn't know, but we do want converts to Catholic faith. Almost yes. everybody in the parish will be thrilled to see you. If there are some disgruntled people, first of all, they're probably not in the parish.
Yes, exactly.
But please ignore them. I don't know what else to say, Joe, but that's really a horrible thing if people are giving converts a hard time for coming into the Catholic Church.
In a way, I think we might have found the people who are the furthest from Catholicism, the hard-hearted ex-Catholic Pharisees.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I actually saw a thread recently where it was posted on an ex-Catholic forum, and it was people complaining about the Catholic Church closing beautiful inner-city churches that served the poor. And I was like, hey, guys, I bet if you went to church and tithe, they wouldn't be closing those churches.
Yeah.
But
did you say that or did you just think it?
I didn't. I didn't want to like even delve in, but I'm saying it now. So right. If you're listening.
Like, if you really want those churches open, there's an answer for that. There's
right. If you're worried about the direction converts are taking the church, go back to your faith and live it out. I bet if you took that seriously and weren't just an activist, you'd probably end up being more like the converts and you wouldn't feel the need to attack them anymore.
Yeah, I'm really, really sorry to hear that. But you should be. I mean, somebody said that somebody told her online the cradle Catholics are secretly talking about you behind your back. They don't really like you. That's a horrible thing. Like that's just sowing suspicion.
Yes.
That's really horrible. So
I am not acquainted with this in real life at all.
No,
this
I wasn't
seems
either.
Like, classic kind of internet mean girls.
Yeah, right. All right, let's go to Cincinnati. Chuck is in Cincinnati, Ohio, watching on YouTube. We're glad you're here. Chuck, go ahead with your question.
Yeah, hello, Mr. Heschmeyer. So there's some presumptions. Yeah, hello. There's some presumptions into this before I ask my question, but because God had commanded Abraham and nobody had risen from the dead yet, and this was a matter of him almost sacrificing his son of promise. I'm presuming that you do believe that Abraham was a man of faith, a man
yes.
of strong faith. So I'd like to ask, so there's two sides to this. I'd like to ask, where did you first learn, perhaps from, you know, maybe your mother or father, somebody had said that this is what the Bible says, or maybe a priest had told you, or maybe you read it yourself, finding out this is, yes, he is a man of faith. And the flip side, which would be an example of, but I'm not trying to condemn the person. But anyway, so within the confines of the United States, you know, when then President Joe Biden, when he was declined by a priest concerning the mass, because then President Joe Biden had supported the LGBTQ, that most Roman Catholics here in the United States say, yeah, he's Roman Catholic, he's a man of faith, or did most Roman Catholics in this country say, you know, that's what he says, you know, President Joe Biden, he says he's a Roman, that's what he says, but, you know, I just don't know. So that's my flip side, two sides of the coin question.
Okay. I don't right now see the connection between those two questions. But I'll say, I don't remember exactly the first time I heard about Abraham's faith. It is described pretty explicitly, for instance, in Genesis 15, verse 6, Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness. This is a pretty pivotal line that, St. Paul draws upon in his exegesis of Abraham's faith in Romans. So I'm sure it was a combination, probably my mom and my mom and dad teaching me Bible stories as a kid, and probably before I could even read, and then hearing about them at Mass and, everything else. In terms of Joe Biden, there were a lot of controversies that, led to him being told not to present himself for communion, not least of which is that he supported the legalized killing of unborn children. And so faith isn't just a, mere internal set of ideas about God. True faith is something that's actually lived out. And so if you're living a life contrary to the faith you claim to have, that is enough reason, and this is explicit church teaching, not to present yourself for communion. So, you know, you could say, I believe in monogamy. If you're living in an adulterous relationship, you shouldn't present yourself for communion. It's just a matter of having the integrity of having your, life match your, stated beliefs.
That brings us right to the break. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. It's Ask Me Anything this hour, 888-318-7884. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that, but he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs, but you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests, he does on-air debates, and he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Father Jeff Kirby, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme, Go Make Disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
On Thursday's Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, our topic will be, whom or what are you praying for? And now back to Catholic Answers Live with Cy Kellett.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and Joe Heschmeyer is our guest both hours. Joe's written some of the most awesome Catholic books available, and I know that because it's in this script that Carrie gave me. The Eucharist is Really Jesus, or Pope Peter, How About the Early Church Was the Catholic Church? They are all on sale during our store-wide Easter sale. As a matter of fact, everything in our online shop is on sale with dynamite prices store-wide. Excellent use of the word dynamite, Carrie. That's a great deal with important days like Mother's Day, Father's Day, confirmations, and graduations coming up. What are you waiting for? Visit shop.catholic.com today and check out our discounted prices store-wide. That, to me, that ad read like, Joe's books are so great that they're on sale with everything else we've got. Like, congratulations, Joe. We value your books so much, we put them on sale with everything else.
Yeah, it's, you know, Terry's got a unique angle on such things. How do I put that nicely?
Yeah. It was a very enthusiastic ad, though. So go to shop.catholic.com and get your Easter savings right now. One of the best things that happens to us here at Catholic Answers is people come to visit us from time to time. And we have some good friends now. They have become our good friends in the last hour or so here who are visiting us from Omaha, Nebraska. And in studio with us now is Peg from Omaha. Welcome, Peg.
Thank you.
What are you all doing in San Diego?
Oh, boy, we've done a lot. We went on a bay cruise with my brother. We went up to the cemetery on Cabrillo, up on Point
Loma.
The
military cemetery. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We've walked along the beach a lot.
Does any of it compare to the glory of coming to Catholic Answers?
Absolutely not.
Peg, you're all right. You are all right. We are big fans of Spirit Catholic Radio, which I think started in Omaha. I'm not sure, it's in lots of cities up there now. But oh, what a great job they do. Well, did you come with a question for Joe?
Yeah, I have some dear Muslim friends, and they believe in one God, and they keep asking me, where in the Bible does it say that Jesus is God?
Yeah, that's a great question. So part of this is a misunderstanding about what it looks like for Jesus to claim to be God. So Jesus doesn't just go out there and begin a sermon by saying, hello, everyone, I'm God. I'm the second person of the Trinity. That's not how he does things. And Muslims used to the way the Quran is written might be surprised that, how do I want to put this? Jesus presents himself slowly, but in a way that seems much more like real life than like somebody just writing a story. And I mean, reword that however you want. But Jesus presents himself as God. Now, he's also described as God. So you actually see this all over the place, but especially in the Gospel of John. So, for instance, in John 20, verse 28, when Jesus appears to Thomas and says to touch his wounds, Thomas responds, my Lord and my God. And Jesus doesn't say, like, how dare you? He says, have you believed because you've seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet believe. So he pronounces a blessing on those who, like Thomas, declare Jesus to be Lord and God. But then you also have these other places where you have these Old Testament prophecies. You know, so for instance, where it says, at the name of Jesus, every knee shall bend. This is quoting the Old Testament where it talks about at the name of Yahweh, every knee shall bend. Now, there's no question that Yahweh in the Old Testament is God. This is how God reveals himself. And so this is showing us that Jesus is the true God of Israel. And there are plenty of other places, you know, where, for instance, in Malachi, God promises to enter his temple. And there's all these, what's sometimes called the two powers, where you see Yahweh coming from Yahweh to do something. And it led to a great deal of confusion among people before the time of Christ to say, well, how can we talk about God sending God? That doesn't make sense. Or God saying, let us make man in our image. Well, that doesn't make sense. But with the Trinity, it's like, oh, suddenly all of these ambiguous Old Testament passages come into clear light as well, where now we can understand what's going on there. So Jesus presents himself as God, affirms when he is called God, is referred to by people like St. Paul as God, and then fulfills Old Testament scriptures about God, and make sense of other Old Testament passages that'd be very hard to understand otherwise. So for all those reasons, we would say the New Testament clearly shows us that Jesus presents himself as God, and then he truly dies and rises from the dead, as only God could do.
What do you think? Will that help?
That'll help.
All right. I don't know if you know all the titles to Joe's books, but I'll name some titles. You tell me which one you want.
And then we'll,
Pope Peter, the early church was the Catholic Church. Why am I drawing up? Oh, the Eucharist is really Jesus. any of those strike you?
Which one has the biggest font? No, I'm kidding.
Joe writes picture books as well. We could just give you a picture book.
The Eucharist is the font of all graces, so you can get a bigger font than that.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Peg. Thanks for coming in.
All right, you bet.
It's very nice to have a visitor. And to all of you, thanks for coming to visit us. It's very nice.
Okay.
All right, on to our next caller is in Omaha, Nebraska. That's hilarious. Listening on Spirit Catholic Radio. Tom in Omaha, Nebraska. I don't know if you know Peg, Tom. Does everybody in Omaha know each other? Welcome, Tom. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, Omaha is a million people, and we don't know each other.
You don't know? All right.
I can tell you. Okay, my question is this. In the Bible, nowhere is an angel presented as a female. And my question, and then in the apparitions to saints and so on, there's St. Clair and St. Catherine Labouré and others, and the angel is always a male. And I wonder, have you ever heard of a situation that's a reliable thing, that where an angel came as a female?
I have not. Certainly not any of the biblical presentations of angels. No, it's probably worth saying angels are spiritual beings. They don't have bodies. And so even what we mean in talking about whether they're male or female is reading into that a whole lot of bodiliness that they don't possess. Now, nevertheless, when they appear, they do appear in male form, and the names that angels have become male names as they're taken up by humans. But, you know, Matthew 22:30, where Jesus describes celibacy in heaven by saying that in the resurrection, or in the resurrected world, that in the resurrection, humans neither marry nor are given in marriage, but are like angels in heaven. That seems to suggest pretty plainly that they're not sexual beings, which of course they're not as spiritual beings. So yeah, I don't think there's any foundation for that. Does that make sense to you, Tom?
Yes. Thank you.
All right, Tom. Thank you. Let's see if our next caller is from...
Since, you know, so we just had two Omaha ones in a row, I wanted to tie that in with the font joke by saying, since there are no female angels, you could say they're kind of sans serifs.
I honestly, I'm not even joking. It's been a tough week for me, but I have no idea what that means.
Sans serif is what you call the font without the little edges on the little edge on a font are serifs.
I think at
like
the break,
New Roman.
I'm going to ask you to explain this to me at the break.
Okay.
Because I feel really stupid right now.
No, I think I'm just batting zero in terms
is
of...
Is it you or is it me? I don't know, because I feel like I should know what this is.
Callers decide.
All right, Jennifer is in Indiana listening on the EWTN app. Jennifer, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
Hi, I'm calling because my brother was confirmed in the church 2 years ago. This year, me and my husband were confirmed in the church. And so now my mom is asking questions and interested. And her question for me this week was, why can't she take the Eucharist if she truly believes that it's the body and blood of Christ?
Oh,
yeah, that's wonderful. Well, first of all, it's welcome home to your brother, to your husband, to you. Second, it sounds like there may be more good news in the future with your mom if she's really faithfully asking such questions and leading where there's, you know, seeing where they go. But third, to answer the question, the Eucharist, and we see this even going all the way back to St. Justin Martyr in First Apologies, when he's talking about who can receive communion, he mentions that it's only those who are baptized who are living a life in accordance with the teachings of the church. And this is what's called closed communion. And there's a couple reasons for this. One, if you look at all the ways baptism is prefigured, you have things like the Passover meal, which was only available to the circumcised, like full member of the covenant community. And so someone who isn't fully in membership doesn't partake of the fulfillment of the Passover, the Eucharist. Second, the Eucharist is a form of communion. And so in the same way that you can have various means of communion with your spouse before you get married, the fullness of that only happens once everything is rightly established. The same is true with the Eucharist. This is the fullest expression of communion that we have. And so it is reserved for when we're in a rightly regulated relationship with our Lord. And then finally, as St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 10, the Eucharist creates our communion in the church. He says there is one body, meaning the church, because we partake of the one loaf, our ton. And so the Eucharist creates not only union with Christ the head, but also union with the Catholic Church's body. And so someone who doesn't want to enter into communion with Christ or doesn't want to enter into communion with the church can't consciously, in good faith, receive the Eucharist, because you see, like, they're saying one thing with their body, that they want to enter communion, and saying something else with their heart, that they don't want to enter full communion. And that kind of contradiction is wrong. It's something that we are actually warned not to treat the Eucharist frivolously in 1 Corinthians 11, because Paul warns we could even eat and drink damnation upon ourselves. So I don't know, does thinking about it in those ways help? Thinking about it as the fulfillment of the Passover, as this act of, you know, even bodily communion, and as the means of creating communion with the church as well? Does this help explain why the church is always, like, this is not some new teaching, and this isn't like some response to the Reformation. We find this all the way back in the 100s, Christians talking about this.
Yes, that's very helpful. Yes.
Oh, good. Good.
Joe, you're not going to give her a book?
Oh, yeah. You should get the book, The Eucharist is Really Jesus. A lot of times, Cy gives the book. I'm bad at missing that.
Oh, you were waiting.
So
you were waiting for me to give the book.
I do the answering questions.
I mean, when the book, the question is about the Eucharist,
that is a great point.
You
should have said, hey, is the Eucharist really Jesus? And do you have anything I could read on that?
Yeah, we do.
I would have gotten that clear.
We do occasionally get calls like that where it's like, really? Yeah. That's calling up when Tim Staples is on and going, what does the Bible mean when it says, behold your mother? Okay. Oh, really? Okay. All right. Jennifer, hang on. We want to send you The Eucharist is Really Jesus by our guest, Joe Heschmeyer. All we need is an address, and we'll get that if you'll give it to Edgar. That'll take us to the break. Right back with more Ask Me Anything on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Mother Angelica had a simple goal when she began EWTN, to reach the world with the gospel message. EWTN News, headquartered in Washington, D.C., operates multiple global news services, including Catholic News Agency and the National Catholic Register newspaper. We've never wavered from our mandate to proclaim the truth and majesty of the Catholic faith. Thank you for joining EWTN in this mission.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Our guest is Joe Heschmeyer, and lines are full. Off to the phones we go. It's Ask Me Anything, so you never know what people are going to ask. And you definitely don't know with our next caller, our friend Emma from Hayden, Idaho, who is watching on YouTube. Welcome back, Emma.
Hi. I got to tell you, I get your Catholic Answers magazine, and my husband, who's a Protestant, reads through them completely.
Nice.
And I caught him last night at our Bible study, and they said, well, you should see this article. It is a Catholic before a Catholic magazine. It's really good.
Well, that is quite an endorsement for a Catholic magazine.
We should put that on the magazine cover.
Yeah. That should be the subhead of the whole thing, right, for a Catholic magazine.
He's a knucklehead.
It's really good.
He just got a lot of them. So at this Bible study that I go to that's Protestant, again, because it's in my house, we've been together for about 10 years. Last night we were in Matthew. We're reading through Matthew. And in 17, we kind of got off track a little bit. But they were saying that Tozer, if you know who he is, said that John the Baptist is Elijah. And
yes,
I went,
and no.
Whoa. Oh, okay.
Okay, so if you want the yes answer, Matthew 11:14 says, if you're willing to accept it, he is Elijah who is to come, speaking about John the Baptist. And so likewise in Matthew 17, the part you're talking about, where Jesus talked about how Elijah has come and the world didn't know him. It's a reference to John the Baptist. But he's not literally like a reincarnated Elijah. He's That's the difference. So in John 1:21, when John the Baptist is directly asked if he's Elijah, he says no, he's not the reincarnation of him. He is Elijah in the sense that Jesus is talking about, that he's the persona, one who's going to be the messenger of what?
Persona. Is he persona?
Yeah, he's like persona. He's like a personification. But Elijah. But there is an actual human being, Elijah. And so the context of Matthew 17 is really critical because they've just seen literal Elijah at the Transfiguration. And so then they're like, well, what is all this stuff about? And Jesus is explaining that the prophecy is not talking about, in other words, the Transfiguration was not fulfilling the Elijah passages about the coming of Elijah, although Elijah did literally come. The Elijah passages are instead referring to the coming of John the Baptist because he's fulfilling that role.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. We did. He's pretty good for a Catholic apologist, right?
Thanks, guys.
All right. It's always good to talk with you, Emma. Thank you very much for the call. On we go to Troy, Michigan. Mark is in Troy watching on YouTube. Welcome, Mark. Go ahead with your question for Joe.
I have a couple of questions. The first one is, what's a book you can recommend for my son? We're homeschooling him, and I'm kind of looking at all of your books. I'm trying to figure out what's good for a 15-year-old.
Oh, okay. The age was what I was missing there. What kind of a reader is he?
He's a pretty big reader. He was 9 years old, he used to read H.P. Lovecraft.
Oh, nice.
At 9 years old? Wow.
Yes.
Is he, like, setting fires in your home or anything?
Yeah, that's very spooky stuff.
Okay, wonderful. I would recommend... So, look, it's hard to choose one of my own books because they're, like, children. You always like the most recent one. I'm just kidding. It's just hard to choose. But I would say The Eucharist is Really Jesus might be something where it takes something that he's already hopefully passionate about, our Lord in the Eucharist, and it opens up different angles he maybe hadn't thought about. But without knowing your son, I don't know if he'd be more interested in church history or more interested in Eucharistic theology or more interested in the papacy. But those would be kind of avenues. So if he seems passionate about one of those other topics, we could switch that up. But what was your other question?
Also, the other question is, so my wife and I our marriage is struggling at times, and I need to figure out what I can do as a Catholic man to help with the marriage.
Yeah. I would say a lot of it is remembering to not just serve your wife, but to serve her in the ways that she needs and wants to be served, which are often very different ways. Because, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with the whole concept of, like, love languages and any of those things, but we can sometimes have this thing where, speaking very broadly, as men, we often want to serve the women that we love by doing things for them. And sometimes we're invited to serve them in ways that are more inconvenient, like listening or being emotionally vulnerable or affirming them with words of praise. And so St. John Chrysostom had some fantastic advice for men. He said, tell her that you love her more than your own life, because this present life is nothing, and that your only hope is that the two of you pass through this life in such a way that in the world to come you will be united in perfect love. Say to her, our time here is brief and fleeting, but if we're pleasing to God, we can exchange this life for the kingdom to come. Then we will be perfectly one with Christ and each other, and our pleasure will know no bounds. That is, I think, the blueprint for a happy marriage, to have explicitly your great affirmation for your wife and esteem for her, coupled with your mission, which is to get one another to heaven. And then to focus on that as much as you can, with all of the ups and downs and struggles that it can be to kind of live that out. What do you say to that?
That's really good advice, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, good. Well, I'm happy to hear that, and hopefully it goes well. If you stay on the line, you can actually choose which of my books you think would be the best one to get for your son.
Hang on, Mark. We'll put you on with Edgar in just a second. Let's try to get as many as we can on this hour. Lines have continued full for the full hour, so let's go to Chris in Dallas, Texas, who's listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. We're delighted to have you here. Chris, go ahead with your question.
Okay, yeah, I'm actually from Omaha.
No way. That's a big Omaha day around here.
I'm just kidding. No. I'm just kidding.
Do you know Peg?
Yeah, Dallas is right. That would have been funny. Got a question. So we've got a 2-year-old foster son, and in a conversation with a friend who wanted to, they're like, let's baptize him, like kind of jokingly. But I was like, well, you know, the parents have to agree to raise him in the faith, and if he's not going to be with us, we can't really do that. But then I was thinking later, one of our arguments for baptizing children is, why deny the child the grace? So my question is, why deny this child the grace, I guess?
So, yeah, just to be very clear, the canon law in Canon 868 says that for an infant to be baptized licitly, which means lawfully, there must be a founded hope that the infant will be brought up in the Catholic religion. If such hope is altogether lacking, the baptism is to be delayed according to the precepts of particular law after the parents have been advised against the reason. That's part two. Part one was that the parents, or at least one of them, or the parent who legitimately takes their place, must consent. So if you were adoptive parents, it would be a different question, because if you have a long-term relationship with the child, then there's a reason to believe that you could have the child baptized and you can raise them in the faith. Even, you know, it doesn't matter if they're biologically your children or not, you would still be their parents. When that isn't the nature of the relationship, then the church doesn't permit it. And the reason is because baptism is the beginning of the spiritual life. It's not the end. And in baptism, you make promises. And you make these promises before God and the church, and the parents make them on behalf of the child. But if there's no way that you can realistically believe that those promises are going to be lived out, the nature of the sacraments, they're not like magic. So you can instead simply pray for the child and model what a true Christian life is. I've got my aunt and uncle did a lot of fostering, and they actually had one of their foster kids who, once he grew up, like tracked them down just to thank them for the witness that they showed him, because they were so loving and kind to him, that can be one of the ways that you exhibit Christ, even to a very small child. That might be the better long-term solution than getting them prematurely baptized when there's no one there to cultivate that and help form that into a mature faith.
Thank
you. Great. Can I ask you another question?
Real quick, please. We're just got about a minute. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah. You know what? I got nervous. I forgot it. Okay. Thank you.
That's all right. Last question. Always. That every time Cy tells people they have a minute, they either forget
up.
Their question
I don't
or,
know.
Or they
yeah.
they start telling their life story. It's a fight or flight. I totally get it.
I apologize for that, Chris. Have you calmed down? Did it come to you now? Or has
right,
it...
Thank you. No? Forget. Yeah, I forget what it was.
As soon as you hang up, you're going to remember it, Chris.
This looks like an excuse to get two books. But no, if you want to stick around and get a book, I'd be happy to. You know what? Actually, maybe a good book would just be Trent Horn's book.
How to remember things?
Why we're Catholic. I gave the wrong.
Yeah,
why we're
Catholic.
Remember things is what I need. I gave the wrong book title.
Hang on, Chris. We're going to give you Why We're Catholic, the wonderful book from our colleague Trent Horn. We'd be happy to. If you'd like it, just stay on the line, give us an address, and we will send it off to you. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. All of the lines have remained quite stubbornly full. Even I see a one line disconnect, and there's a call just a second later. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. Don't go anywhere. We're going to come back We'll get you on. If you're on the line now, we'll get you on with Joe Heschmeyer. And if you haven't called yet, maybe there'll be one or two lines open during the break. That sometimes happens. You're welcome to call 888-318-7884. You don't have to be in Omaha. You can be anywhere. And it doesn't matter what your relationship with the Catholic Church, with the Bible, with Jesus, with the sacraments is. We don't care. We like talking about the Catholic faith. If you've got a question about any of those things, if you want to talk about the saints, you want to talk about the moral teachings of the church, whatever it is, you're welcome here. 888-318-7884.